Hello, welcome to the Hope Show, Gabfest. Myself and Michael Murphy are here going through the best songs, all the punk rock songs. So we're picking 10 each year. We're up to 1978 now. This is the third show that we've done. We started in 76 and we thought, 10 songs would be handy enough. We got to 77 and went, I don't know about 10. And we're there talking beforehand tonight going, how the hell are we going to just narrow this down to 10 songs each year? We'll get there. But God, it's going to be a real struggle. So Michael, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Noel. Great to be here.
Yeah. It's nice to be back again. The sun is shining outside, but it's nice to go back and reminisce over these old songs, isn't it?
It's such a joy. And so many of these songs still have a sparkle, and they excite me the way that they did when I first heard them.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah. And it's been great for me because I'm going back and it's not just these songs then I'm listening to. It's, you know, listening to all the bands from that era and going, wow. Oh, and taking you back to where you were when you first heard them as well, which is really good. So we'll start off, will we?
Perfect.
We go with our first song tonight. First song is Susie and the Banshees, Hong Kong Garden. We'll play it, give it a listen, and then we'll have a chat about it. Michael, what do you think?
I think the same as I always think when that song ends, and that's that I'm bitterly disappointed that it's over. I think there's so much tension in that song. I think it was one of the first songs that I was aware of what tension, what something building and then crescendos and dives and troughs and peaks. That song is not about I'm bored, I've got my hands in my pockets, and I'm on the dole, and I'm really angry. And to me, it's one of the great gifts of the punk moment, that Susie and the Banshees as a group are, that they said, we're going to be very, very imaginative, very creative. And to me, one of the essences, one of the key ingredients of punk is imagination and versatility. Yeah. And Susie and the Banshees, to me, are not a punk band, if that's a limiting term. They're one of the greatest pop bands that have ever existed. Mm. And this song, God, to be doing a song like this so early in your career,
yeah,
I think is an astonishing achievement. And what Susie represented at the time and has continued to represent, the imaginations that she's prized open in people around the world, I think there are very, very few figures from that early punk moment who have done as much as she has done. And to me, they're also one of the great guitar bands. And you understand the bass, Noel, because you play the bass. Is the bass important in that song or in Susie and the Banshees in general?
Yeah, well, the bass is, it's the rhythm, you know, and obviously Budgie's drums then as well, you know, the bass and the drums work together and just the rhythm of the songs. You know, you're listening to that and it's like a different... It's a different rhythmic feel to a lot of the punk songs. You know, punk songs were more straightforward and the chords were going and they were great. You know, there's just tunes there. This had the tune, but it had that kind of driving, pounding beat as well behind. And you know, you listen to a lot of those early Susie and the Banshees songs. And like you were saying, there's the tension, there's an aggression, isn't there? You know, but yet they seem really passionate songs. And I kind of, I, whenever I listen to Susie, I'm going, you know, punk was about people just getting up and joining a band. Anyone can be in a band. But then you listen to this music and you go, they know what they're doing, you know, and it's their first album, you know, so amazing what they could do. Maybe they were just experimenting with sound and experimenting with rhythms. And, but like they come across as really, really competent musicians. And one thing about that album, is John Peel played that whole album on a show, the cassette version of it. He brought in the cassette, put the cassette on and played it from start to finish. You know, which is, you know, when you think about it, like, you know, I think what we're doing, every song we're talking after every song, he put on the whole record, BBC Radio, from start to finish without talking, without interruption. And then just went, oh, well, that's that then, isn't it? You know, amazing.
Yeah, it completely speaks for itself. And I think this was a complete breakthrough musically, not just for punk, but for popular music in general. I this is a masterpiece.
And as you say, so influential, like Peter Hook, you know, that kind of the driving bass line as well and the Joy Division sound, you know, had to have been listening to Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah, and you too. You know, so many bands that don't belong to the punk template were inspired by this. And when you consider that, as you say, that Susie was someone who got up, and I'm sure it was a horrible mess, but you know, at that 100 club, her Marco Peroni, who goes on to be in the Ants, and Sid Vicious, and you know, they're not rehearsed, they're not together, they wouldn't have been allowed on a stage if it was a prog rock gig or a glam rock gig, but punk opened the door, and God, look what happened to the people who took the invitation to run in through that door.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Well, that's Susie. Up next, we've got the Skids, and this song that we're playing is from the Scared to Dance album, and it's the first song on side two. The Saints Are Coming. We'll have a listen and then talk about it. But again, another great song. This is The Skids, The Saints Are Coming.
I cried to my daddy on the telephone. How long now? Till the clouds don't roll and you come on the line. Well, but the shadow still remains in Shorty's and your descent.
great thing about listening to that song is I've got my headphones on, volumes turned up full, and it's kind of all through my head. The whole sound is brilliant.
Absolutely thrilling. I think the Skids were a sensationally brilliant band. You've got Stuart Adamson's guitar, one of the great guitar players of that punk movement. And you've got a song that opens with a man's voice saying, "I cried to my daddy on the telephone." So here's punk really showing this vulnerable side. Mm. And, you know, the Skids, working class, Scottish background, anti-fascist background, even though they put out, you know, kind of conflicting signals. His autobiography, Jobson's autobiography, you know, he makes it very, very categorically clear that you couldn't be a fascist where he came from. Mm-hmm. It just wouldn't have been part of the political landscape.
Yeah.
But they absolutely showed this very, very vulnerable side. And that's a roller coaster of a song, but it's a song about very, very vulnerable. It's about a soldier in Northern Ireland, because a lot of the, you know, the contemporaries of the Skids growing up would have been lads who didn't have employment prospects. So they would have gone and a lot of them were stationed in Northern Ireland when they joined the army. So this is absolutely not a song about being macho and we're never scared and we're all together. This is, I think this is an astonishingly fragile piece of art.
Yeah, no, it's really good. My introduction to the Skids was a bit later with the Days in Europa album, which you kind of referenced a bit there. But again, like, I remember putting on that record and going, "Wow, this is great." And I suppose at that stage, you know, I wasn't living through the punk thing, you know, being in Dublin and being, you know, younger, born in 68. So it's only kind of when you look back now and people were, you know, you hear about Mark Perry and stuff saying, "Oh, punk died in 1977 or whatever. And you go, well, the punk that we played, a lot of the songs that, say, we played last week, there's a different sound starting to emerge here. But certainly, you know, punk was far from dead anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, and to me, the Skids, along with the Ruts, are proof that you didn't have to be there at the very start of punk to be very enlightened by it, to be very inspired by it. And I think these bands really, really are important historically. And like you say, with Days in Europa, which was probably the first album that I bought that became part of me. I think it was the third album that I bought. And the Skids on the first album are one of the great guitar bands of the era. And what did they do in the second album? They ditched the guitars in favor of keyboards.
Yeah.
Like, just astonishingly thrilling risk to take.
Yeah.
And if people say punk was dead in 78, that's not a bad thing, if it means the formula of punk, the identikit of punk, was dead, because what came after it was just as thrilling.
Sure.
And the Skids are a big part of that for me.
Yeah. Well, next band up is a band that we featured last week as well. So I think probably the first band that we've had two songs from. Even though we probably could have taken every band, it might be another band tonight, but there's so many bands we could have had more than one song from. And we've kind of been consciously trying to, you know, be fair to ourselves. And, you know, we're picking five songs each, so it's hard. But we both agreed that this band needed to be in tonight. So we'll play it now. This is X-Ray Specs and it's Germ-Free Adolescence.
Like
Well, Michael, why do you think we should have had them in twice, and why do you agree that we put them in twice?
This is 13 months after Obon the Jup Yours. And it could be a completely different group, apart from the vocal style of polystyrene. This is such a musical leap. This, to me, is one of the great pop songs of all time. This is Smells Like Teen Spirit meets ABBA. You know, it's, and also it's this collage of, you know, thoughts about consumerism, about products, and it's a top 20 single in Britain. Like, can you imagine this song goes top 20? Oh, Bondage Up Yours doesn't even hit the charts, and they don't put it on their debut album. Just like Susie with Hong Kong Garden. That's how many brilliant songs were being released by people who were inspired by that moment of punk. I think this is a heartbreaking song. I think this is a song that makes you think. It makes you want to really consider the choices you make. And it's just beautiful to listen to. I love how vulnerable her voice is. People think that punk was angry and was in your face. But some of the greatest moments of punk are really, really tender, very, very human.
Mm,
It's a song you like, Noel.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, oh, God, that album is just, is a great album as well. And for me, it shows, like, I suppose punk is going, at this stage, punk is going in kind of different directions, isn't it? People know, yeah, anyone can be in a band. We can get up on stage. Now it's like, all right, we've done that. Where do we go? Where do we take it? So we've done it. We've made a racket. We can do something here. We can, you know, like you say, we can go in a different direction with our sound. And, you know, that to me is kind of where bands like X-Ray Specs, you know, and next year it'll be, you know, Au Pairs or whatever, or the, you know, the Slits, and you're going, that they're taking it in a different direction. They're going, yeah, we can be in a band, we can make a racket, but let's do something interesting and let's challenge it and let's make the songs mean something. And to me, X-Ray Specs were just great for that. Like, I'd have them alongside the Clash in terms of influence. Now, obviously, they're not as popular and they have nowhere near as many records and don't get spoken about as much. But just in terms of influence in that particular time, and that it can inspire people on, and because the songs all meant something, and polystyrene up on stage, like not caring, you know, hugely influential, I think.
Yeah, without question. And I think that she was so influential, but she was also so out of sync. Yeah. Deliberately, for what was happening at the time, that it took a while for her influence to be fully realized, to be fully embraced. And that says something about punk to me, is that sometimes it can be a depth charge. It doesn't have to be an instant, you know, kind of an instant response.
Yeah.
It can take a while to work its way into the creative impulse is there a better thing for a creative act to do?
Because it's not like bands, you know, around that stage were watching X-Ray Specs and saying, yeah, we're going to sound like X-Ray Specs and get up on stage. But years later, there's bands like Bikini Killer, the whole Riot Girl, are looking back and just being completely influenced by what you know, the path that polystyrene laid down for them, which to me is hugely important.
Yeah, a brilliant, brilliant band, and I think an essential band of 77, but just as essential, maybe even more essential in 1978.
Yeah, great stuff. We move on to the next one. Let's just play this without any introduction. See how it goes.
You never listen to a word that I said. You only see me by the clouds of my way.
go. Public image. So, Johnny Rotten left the stage. John Lydon entered. He started writing those songs when he was on that bus in the Pistols. Do you want to take it from there?
Well, is there a better way to open a song than the word hello and to end it with goodbye? Yeah. And it's, I love that it's two lads in London of Irish descent, Ja Wobble and Lydon. It's a jazz drummer from Canada's first punk band, the Furies, and then not the Irish Furies. And I think the bass line is absolutely incredible, and it opens with a bass line that's proclaiming this music has a lot to do with reggae. This music is going to be propelled by bass. It's not a dance song as such, but you could certainly dance to it. But this was the greatest goodbye song to a previous alter ego. This was a remarkable statement for a young guy who had been put through the washer. It went top 20 in Ireland, which is very funny. Just for a week, it went in and out. I remember it came wrapped in a newspaper. So I thought, God, someone put a lot of care into presenting that record to the buyer. You know, someone wanted to make sure that whoever bought that record got something that was really interesting to touch and to hold and was worthy of investigation. And, you know, it was a kind of a mock-up of one of those awful tabloid papers in Britain. And I think that every single thing about that single is perfect.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I was looking back and listening to Peel during the week, you know, and remembering Religion, the song Religion, you know, Ireland 1978, and a song, you know, on your record player, like Stained Glass Windows. Oh, it's just a great statement as well, you know. And I was thinking as well, like, so say the Pistols were, you know, they were an anti-establishment band or whatever. My dad used to say, oh, you're going into town, it's all the anti-gang, you know, everything's the anti-gang, you know. But I think, say, Public Image are like the anti-anti-gang, you know. They're not, it's not that they're the positive gang, but it's just like they're the anti-rock band, the anti-previous, you know. They were kind of out on their own, you know, but yet influencing as well and being influenced by what had happened with punk, but they were out on their own creating this new sound. And real, it's still the two fingers up, isn't it? You know, it's real, like, I'm doing what I want to do and gone and making these statements and causing this controversy. And like you say, the records, there was, you know, like Metal Box that came, and the Metal Box is just like much more thought going into the whole packaging of themselves, but not in a sales way, just to kind of like, I don't know, like a different way of doing things.
Yeah, I completely love that idea that there's the anti band without being positive.
Yeah.
And to me, Lydon is one of the great lyricists of our generation. I don't want to stretch it by saying he's one of the great poets, but he's one of the great word smiths, the word manipulators. The thought that went into those lyrics, this is not a throwaway song. This is very pointed and purposeful and direct. And, and it's the sound, I think Peel, especially early on, are the sound of isolation and loneliness, but equally they're the sound of saying, but I'm not accepting that. I will not be limited by the hand that I've been dealt, or by what you, whoever the you is, think that I deserve. I will not accept constraint.
I
think it's a absolutely beautiful perspective.
Yeah, I love that line. It's not a game of Monopoly. You know, that, you know, life, or my life, isn't a game of Monopoly, and you're not to look on me as a game. You know, I just think it's a really strong line as well.
Yeah, and still as good, as powerful.
Yeah. Well, we move on to next song. It's a Magazine, and Shot by Both Sides.
Is what's real, what I give her to understand is exactly what I steal. I went my way into the heart of the crowd, went my way into the heart of the crowd. I was shocked to find what was allowed. I didn't lose my soul in the crowd. Shots, sides.
So that was Magazine, Shot by Both Sides. So we haven't played the Buzzcocks quite yet. We haven't got around to the Buzzcocks. And at this stage, Howard DeVoto has already been in and left the Buzzcocks. And his reason, well, one of the reasons is he wanted to form a less traditional rock band. Magazine comes out of it. What's your memory of Magazine, Michael?
Just how far away they were from everything that I thought constituted pop music. You shouldn't leave the Buzzcocks. The Buzzcocks are, you know, they're one of the great pop bands of all time. And he walked away from it, and he did this, which to me is very dark pop. And this, again, is one of the most long-term gifts of punk, of the punk moment, is that it brought a really, really sense of depth and darkness to pop music. This is a pop song, but it's also a dark, paranoid, upsetting world to be pulled in. Barry Adamson is playing bass, who, one of the great bass players of popular music, goes on to be, you know, play with Visage, goes on to tour with, you know, Nick Cave on four of the pivotal Nick Cave albums. And then you've got John McGaugh, arguably one of the greatest guitar players in rock music. So to leave the Buzzcocks, you should fail. You deserve to fail. And if you leave the Buzzcocks to do something that's experimental, you shouldn't be, in my opinion, writing pop music that's as brilliant and immediate and exciting as this is. This is a song that never, ever gets old. What do you make, Niall, of it?
Yeah, so Magazine, I kind of missed out on them in at that stage, you know, but I only got back to listening to Magazine again. I think I mentioned it last week about that cassette that when we all brought a tape into work back in probably 1988 and 89 maybe, and one of the people I worked with Magazine was his tape, and I hadn't really listened to them. I knew, you know, Devoto left the Buzzcocks, so I was like, well, I'm listening to the Buzzcocks. I just they just kind of passed me by. And then it was only when Dave brought in the album, was it Real Life? Is that the album? And I was going, wow, how come I haven't heard this, you know? And then, you know, we'd be talking about the influence of bands, you know, in work, and there's a whole legion of bands that were influenced by that Magazine sound. And the first time around, you know, I did miss out on it, probably because, you know, a couple of years later is when I was getting into listening to music. And then, you know, the records I started buying was more the kind of more on the eye end of things, I suppose, and the more straightforward punk end of things. And then I moved on to a little bit of, you know, the likes of Three Johns, and we get talking about this over the years as we go through the shows. So that kind of era, that little bit of that post-punk, even though it's only 78, that start of post-punk kind of missed me by. And it's well, I'm it's all the worse for me for missing out on it. But I was like, when I heard that tape in work, I was going, how the hell have I not come across this before? So that was Magazine anyway, Shot by Both Sides. Again, hugely influential band. And when you went through the people who were in them and what they've gone on to do and what Devoto has gone on to do and all, you know, subsequent is you know, like it's some legacy, you know, of music that he has had since being in the Buzzcocks and then Magazine, and some influence.
Yeah. And, you know, before we go into the next one, it again just shows what a horrible lie it is when people say, oh, punk was just, you know, two chords or three chords and just shouting and mouthing off, and, you know, it wasn't musical. Those people have never heard Magazine or Public Image Limited or the Skids.
Yeah, yeah. All these songs that we're playing tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Should we move on to the next one? Another magical song. This is a band, second band that we've already played a song by. Joe Strummer has featured now in 3 years. I suppose it's probably only right from our perspective we would do that, because maybe we're biased. You know, my big homage to Joe Strummer is that we call our dog after him. You know, our dog was called Strummer, so. There's no greater accolade that you can give to somebody. But we're going to play White Man and Hammersmith Palais by The Clash, and we'll have a little chat about it after.
One, two, three, four.
here we go again, talking about The Clash and Joe Strummer and just how incredible the band were. And I know we may get some stick, because I'm certainly putting it out there that The Clash were the band that mattered. And people will go, oh, I prefer the Pistols or whatever, you know, man. But The Clash just, and that song, and I'm sure you might, maybe you'll go through the song a bit now. But like writing it, I'm just listening to the lyrics and the journey that song takes is just unreal.
Now, I remember hearing that song on the radio, it might have been John Peel, and going into town. I wouldn't have gone into town much when I was growing up. You know, I would have hung around my own neighborhood. And I remember going in before I did the Leaving Cert, going into town wanting to buy this single, but I didn't know who was by. You know, I didn't know it was The Clash. I just knew it was a song that I wanted to buy. And I didn't end up buying it because I didn't know how to ask for it in the shop. But how are we 44 years later still talking about income disparity, about inequality, when that topic was being addressed in the most passionate and interesting and unique way? This wasn't a song shouting, stop the inequality. You know, this was a complete short story. Yeah. To me, the song is a short story that's with brilliant music. And that songs like this went into the charts, but then a band like The Clash were so obstinate that they didn't put it on their next album, which really could have done with a song of that quality. In my opinion, it's a better song than anything that's on it. And it's a better song than most bands of the era had.
Yeah.
And The Clash thought, no, that's not going on the album. So there's so much obstinacy. There's so much personal pride in what you could do with your creativity in the song. And it's like later with Dexy's Midnight Runners with Gino, which sounds like they're saying, oh, Gino was great. But it's a song about being disappointed by going to see acts who you're excited to see. And they didn't deliver in a way that you expected. And you take that frustration into writing a song that's not just about, oh, I went to a gig and I didn't like it, and so I'm angry with the world. It's, what am I angry with the world about, and what would make the world better? I think this is one of the most positive statements of the early punk body of songs. I think I always go to this song whenever I need a bit of motivation or a bit of enthusiasm or a bit of, if I'm down, this is absolutely one of my first go-to songs.
Yeah, it's so good. You know, he writes a song about going to a gig. That's where it starts. He's going to a gig and he's excited about going to, as we all have been, you know, as well, certainly we used to be anyway, but and we will be again, you know, excited about going to a gig. And then the band on stage are disappointing him a bit. And you kind of go, that's what the song's about. And then suddenly he starts talking about violence in the streets, you know, and if there's gun violence, you should join the British Army. But like, don't worry about that. Get involved, get out there, be involved. And, you know, why not phone up Robin Hood and ask him for some wealth distribution? Suddenly it's taken on a completely different tack. And then starts talking about punks of, you know, in the UK, and, you know, they're too busy fighting to get out and change things. And it's like, come on, lads, we can do this, you know? And then, you know, he gets the dig in about, you know, some of the bands in Burton Suits or whatever, the power pop bands, and then goes back to the gig. And it's just like the whole story, like, as you say, it's just a fabulous piece of work. And it's great that we're getting to talk about, you know, songs and dissecting them a little bit, because I'm not sure if that song gets dissected enough. Maybe it does. I don't know. But like when you really dig through that song, it's just incredible. The whole piece and the whole idea, the whole concept. Like, you know, was he at the gig? Was he thinking of the song when he went there? You know, Delroy Wilson, was he thinking, oh, you know what? That's disappointing. I'm going to write a song. This could be the Four Tops or whatever, you know. It's just what a piece of work.
And the kicker in it, Niall, you know, if Adolf Hitler,
yeah,
you know, were here today, they'd send a limousine anyway. Yeah. This,
yeah,
to me, that's a brilliant dissection of celebrity culture,
yeah,
of how people who don't deserve a platform get one, and what damage they can do if, as you pointed out, if the collective, if people don't say, oh, you know what? Instead of looking at them and thinking they're different from us, let's do collaborative action that stops people like Hitler coming along and then and doing the type of evil that he was able to get away with. Absolutely brilliant. It's a brilliant short story.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's hard for any song to follow that, but we have to keep going. We're only on track seven. We're only on track six there. We go on to track seven now. And the next song, we're going over stateside this time. So we've moved away from the Clash and Hammersmith Palais to this is Patti Smith with Because the Night.
And understand, desirous hunger is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Michael, when we were putting the songs together for this show and we were picking five each, that song didn't enter my radar at all. Because to me, I don't know, I think Bruce Springsteen might have been involved in writing it as well. So I'm not sure, but it didn't enter my radar. And I'm glad you put it in. But why did you feel the need to have that in your, say, top five, although it's we'd five each, but you know, there was a crossover of songs. So why did you feel the need that that song should be here for representing 1978?
First of all, I think Patti Smith is one of the most important figures that popular music has ever produced. Secondly, I think this song is one of the greatest pop songs of all time. I think there's so much passion, there's so much poise in that. And it's co-written with Bruce Springsteen. It was a song that he didn't finish. And his producer, Jimmy Iovine, who then went on to sign Tupac, which I think is really funny. So it's there's a bit of a link to hip hop in there. And Patti Smith adds lyrics and makes it this statement. And to me, it's one of the greatest female voiced rock songs ever recorded. It begins with that piano and female voice, and it seems fragile, and she can certainly sing. She's got a fantastic emotional range, and there's parts where it seems like she's tripping over the words because she's got so much that she wants to say. And to me, this song is the sound of people melting down their Meatloaf albums. This is the sound of a million Meatloaf albums being melted down and people going and thinking, God, I better go and check out punk rock.
Well, that can be no bad thing, can it? Meatloaf albums being melted.
Yeah, and making buckets, you know, making buckets for lifting clay or earth with the old Meatloaf albums, although Meatloaf was produced by the same guy. You know, so to me, this is just far more interesting. It's story driven, like the Clash were, or like Meatloaf were. But to me, this is light years ahead of anything that hard rock was doing for the next decade. After this, I think that Patti Smith brought so much to rock music, not just lyrically, but in terms of the sound of the songs. You know, we rightly think of her as a great lyricist, but she was part of a band that were also making a brilliant sound. So to me, this is as thrilling as The Clash or Public Image Limited. And it's wrapped up for me on a personal level as something that could convey emotion that I certainly didn't hear in rock music. Maybe I liked ELO, but I certainly wasn't thinking that there was a manifesto of how to live or how to sense the world in there. But I certainly feel that Patti Smith's work
excellent
is a manifesto for how to live and how to sense the world that you live in.
And again, it's the second song we featured from Patti Smith, you know, and there's only a very small number, maybe three artists that will get that second song. Maybe five, I don't know how many will have it eventually, but there'll only be a small number of artists will have that second song after we do 45 years of it. So, you know, that says a lot as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, think of the leap that this artist has made in that 2 years since Piss Factory. And to me, this is rock music unapologetically. But can you imagine Aerosmith doing Piss Factory? You know, can you imagine Ted Nugent doing Piss Factory? So to me, that's why Patti Smith rules and is really, really important and is really vital. And I think that it was such a great thing for punk that she was, and I'm not saying that she was the absolute essential punk artist, but she pulled punk in a direction that made lots of avenues open and available for self-expression.
Excellent, excellent. Another band that opened up avenues are the Mekons. So they're the next track, and this is Where Were You from the Mekons. We'll be right back.
Radio. When I watched you from a distance, didn't see me. You were standing in a queue, didn't see me. You had yellow hair, didn't see me. I wanna talk to you all night, do you like me? I wanna find out about your life, but do you like me? Or could you ever be my wife? Do you love me?
So that's the Mekons, Where Were You? 40 seconds, I was timing it there. Builds up at the start, 40 seconds. 2 minutes later, it's over. Short and sharp and a love song, but just a great song.
A brilliant song, but just think about the sound of that for a moment. You know, if punk is meant to be big, striking, strident chords, you know, showing off that, you know, that wielding energy, this is where that scratchy, ugly guitar comes in, that to me then becomes the template for certainly for British rock and British indie pop for the next decade, and arguably, you know, continues to be in there post C86. And I trace it back to here.
Yeah.
And that's to me how important this single was. And again, it's a man crying in his bed.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, look at me, I'm great, I'm taking on the world, or you know, the system sucks. This is very, very tender and very, very, I don't know if it's the right term, but it's a collage. It seems like it's built up of sounds, and it's not trying to be a pop song that, oh, how do you write a pop song? You make things all nice and pretty and they fit together. There's so many things in the song that are working together, that are agitating it against each other, that are abrasive. To me, that this is abrasive art. And what better legacy for punk?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, there's these cities, and punk was, you know, popping up in cities, and Dublin would have been one of them, and, you know, Manchester scene. And this is like a lead scene, and Gang of Four were there, and Delta Five, and Mekons kind of, you know, expanded their sound to a more country sound than afterwards, as maybe they listened to more music and learned to play their instruments or whatever. But just that kind of, as you say, that kind of, the guitars are kind of cutting into you, aren't they, with that sound, you know? And it's amazing. I never really thought of that as a love song. It was just a great song. And then I kind of was thinking more about it and going, yeah, that's really it. Because the Mekons, to me, were a political band. And those bands were political and making statements at the start. But that is just basically a love song. And a really, really good one, though.
Yeah, and a love song that really looks closely at what's going on with young people at the time. So that's very, very interesting. It's a documentary. You know, I think a lot of pop music is a flight of fantasy. It's imagination. But this is like a documentary of someone who's really thinking hard about the situation that they're in, and looking at kind of fashion and style and clothes and all of the things that you would see in an ad that really we should be questioning and not accepting. And to me, this song is a song saying, don't accept, you know, the images that are pushed on you.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good, really good stuff. I suppose, speaking of love songs, our next one is another one of a band that's full of them, I suppose, which we go on and we'll have a chat then. This is Ever Fall in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have Fallen in Love With, Buzzcocks.
You make me feel under the hood, and I'm hurt. And if I start a commotion, I run.
So, two singles, two albums, 1978, and six singles, by my recollection, the Buzzcocks. So we could have picked, you know, any number of songs from them. And I think it's important that we had them in because of the influence. You know, all the bands at the moment that we're playing have had huge influence on what's going to, you know, appear over the, you know, whatever next number of years. And the Buzzcocks, You keep saying that, you know, about pop songs and about, you know, Patti Smith, they're all being such good pop songs. Strip That Bare, what an amazing pop song.
Absolutely. And to me, what a brilliant pop band and what a prolific pop band. Mm. And, you know, how could Howard DeVoto leave this band?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a top 20 single right there. I grew up listening to Dana on the radio in Ireland and, you know, cabaret singers like Joe Dolan. And they were pop acts, and Slade and Sweet and other acts were pop acts. But none of them sounded as fresh, as energetic, as youthful, as spiky, as daring as this. And it's just it's a pop song pushed through a very, very modern prism. And it seems like it matters. It doesn't feel like escapism. It really feels like pop that pulls you in and says, you know, come into this world. You mightn't be able to play like this. You might be able to write songs as good as this. And to me, this is why punk is such a significant cultural movement, because these were lads that went to see the Sex Pistols.
Mm.
They don't sound like the Sex Pistols at all. They far more pop hooks, as good as the Pistols were as a pop band. This is taken to another level. These are lads from the regions, if punk was a London movement, and they've taken it to such an exciting, thrilling, monumental, and lasting place in popular music. It's hard to listen to the Buzzcocks without smiling.
I know. Yeah. And, you know, Pistols played, Buzzcocks put them on in Manchester. And this band emerge from that punk sound. And you're going, you know, we keep saying it, we keep reiterating that punk isn't a sound. And your line again, it's ingredients. And look what they have made with similar ingredients to the Sex Pistols. But a completely different sound, and every time you have to smile, don't you? And you have to nod your head. It's great, and with nearly every one of their songs.
Absolutely, and even, you know, I'm thinking back to when we went to see Steve Diggle.
Yeah.
You know, these weren't throwaway songs. You know, if people think these are simple pop songs, go and write some and get into the top 20. And then wake me up to say, oh, yeah, it was so simple, I did it myself. It's incredibly difficult to do this. And they did it over and over and over again. And you know, to be playing those songs with a similar energy and to be writing, because I think some of their later material is outstanding as well. that, you know, they didn't just stop after a couple of years. I think that the Buzzcocks are one of the great pop bands of all time, but they really, really enabled punk to explode into places that I think you couldn't have predicted if it was just that London-centric movement.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we've one song left, Michael. We'll play it. It's not quite the Buzzcocks. It'll wake everybody up, I suppose, if anyone's fallen asleep now. It's the last song of the night. This is our 10th one from the 10 of 1978. This is Sham 69, If the Kids Are United.
Hey, all right.
It's a funny football chant at the end of a song, but I suppose that's what the kids were doing back in 1978. They were going to football and listening to punk rock. I have a lot to say about Sham 69, Michael, but I'd like to hear what you have to say first.
Okay, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say. But that's a top 10 single in Britain. Goes to number 9. It goes higher in Ireland. Goes to number 6 in Ireland. So Ireland made that, you know, that was more popular if you can trust the charts. It was more popular in Ireland. And I think that this was a really, really significant song in punk history, because it's got that streety sound. You mentioned, you know, the football chant. There were loads of people who were into football or into the subculture of being a football supporter, with all the things that went with that, including the violence at this moment in history. Who would have thought that Jam were wearing suits, so they must be businessmen. They would have seen the Clash wearing rags, thinking, who do they think they are? They would have seen the Sex Pistols and thought, ooh, dyed hair, who do they think they are? And this would have been a complete invitation for those people to come into the punk rock party. Now, with all of the, there were negative consequences as well about that. But if you look at the sound of hardcore that's, you know, fermenting underneath the surface in the States at this moment, there's more Sham 69 in there than there is the Clash or the Jam or the Pistols. If you think about Oi and where that went, you know, with I think of a band like the Dropkick Murphys, and there's more Sham 69 in them than the Clash or the Stranglers or the Jam or X-Ray Specs. So they were really, really significant. And I think the Irish case really shows that, you know, this was very, very identifiably English and London.
Yeah.
With all of the tensions between Ireland and England, this was still embraced by kind of the hard men of Dublin. At the time. I remember it being a really, really significant kind of street song.
Yeah.
In a way that the Clash or the Pistols wouldn't have been outside of the subculture.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's my take on it, but I'm fascinated because I know that you probably listened to it more for longer.
Yeah.
Sham 69 than I would have.
So Sham 69 are probably my reason for missing out on Paddy Smith and Magazine. So I would have like, you know, taken the sound of Sham 69 and listened to that, and then what followed on afterwards. And to me, Sham 69 are the band that took punk rock out of the college and brought it onto, and you mentioned there, the streets, and made it, you know, we've said all along that punk was accessible to anybody. Sure. But it was only people who could afford a guitar, you know. And to me, a band like the Sham, you know, they spoke, and I don't want to get too classist about stuff and all, but they spoke to the working class people, you know. They were just working class people in bands. And before that, there wasn't too many, you know. Punk came from art college and came from people who had the education and the ability to know that it's okay to speak for themselves, to know that, yeah, you know, I don't need to get a job because I can be supported. Even if I'm supported at home, I can be supported for a while and I can do this punk thing for a while. Whereas bands like Sham 69, they couldn't afford to go and experiment with music because there's nothing else going on in their life because they didn't have the background that would pay for that. And that their album, you know, the That's Life album that came out, it's like the punk rock opera, you know. Like, I didn't live in that kind of life, sure. I didn't live in a violent working class, but it just spoke to me in a different way. You know, sure, the Clash spoke to me in a way that wanted to, where it was like change the world, but the Sham just seemed like people who lived down around the corner, and they were in a band and they were talking about life around the corner, you know, the good and bad stuff. And then with, you know, Jimmy Pursey was just so misunderstood, I felt, you know. He was in a band, and then suddenly people in working class areas were following the band around and all the trouble that came with that. And some of the ideas, you know, some of these people may have been welcoming Adolf Hitler in their, you know, limousine, you know. And Percy was there on stage and he's just like exasperated by it all. And to me, that the whole thing is fascinating, because like, he's in a band, he wants to play music, he's grown up. And he's trying to appeal to people and he's trying to unite, you know, if we stand together, it will just be the start. And it didn't, it just kind of fell apart for him, you know. So Sham 69 kind of spoke to me growing up in, you know, in Dunnycarney on Dublin's north side or whatever, you know. And again, I'm not from a ghetto. I'm not from big troubled state that had like fights all the time, but it just kind of, they just spoke to me going, yeah, you know what? These are, whether I like it or not, the reality of it, these are people who grew up in a similar enough situation. And that's kind of, that was my take on the Sham. And then, you know, the Rock Against Racism gig, and you know, Percy's heart is in the right place. But yeah, it just kind of unraveled, didn't it? And then, of course, he ended up on the old Grey Whistle Test dancing. I don't know. We don't need to talk about that too much, where he was doing his performance art stage. But still, that's okay. He did it. You know, that was the kind of punk rock where he's going and doing whatever he wants. But yeah, so that was what, like, Sham 69 kind of meant stuff to me. And it was like, yeah, anyone can play in a band. That's right. You don't, you know, and we'll find something and we'll play music. But musically, you know, we've probably played a lot more interesting songs tonight, but still I'm still there with my hands in the air singing along, you know. So and I think it is important that we got them in because of the music that spawned from that.
Yeah, and you know, when I listen to it, I think that's a song the Sex Pistols couldn't have done, because they weren't a unit. Like, they were four separate planets. And to me, that the sound of this single is the sound of a band that really sound like, you know, they mean it. And that, not to be a cliche, but that they are very, very unified by their passion and their energy and their vision. They sound like a unit, the way that the Ramones sounded like a unit. I think they were, to me, Sham 69 were the first band in England that sounded like they were glued together the way the Ramones sounded.
Great stuff. So that was 1978. We'll come back again next week with 10 songs from 79. We've already got a good idea of what we're doing, but I'm sure it'll chop and change a little bit between now and then. So that's great, Michael. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. I'm very sad to see 78 gone, but equally excited about what 1979 holds.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I've really noticed from the show tonight is that the direction has kind of gone a little bit musically, because it's gone off in different roads. And then the influence of all these bands, that their fingerprints are on so much music afterwards, you know. It's great to just look at the list and go, yeah, you can pick the Arctic Monkeys or whatever, you know, you can pick so many bands out of what's going on there. So that's great. Excellent. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks very much, Noel.
Cheers, Michael. Care. And thanks very much to everyone for listening. Take care.